So open up the forum. Anybody got some questions or some topics to bring up that you'd like to hear Longpo talk on? Please, now's the time. Jana Soko just said there was one question that was pending still, is what to do when you become a Majjhima monk, a monk that's got five reins and is not under dependence anymore. Can say a few words to that?
It's been so long since I was a Majjhima monk. Well, these are words that we have in this tradition. Navaka, first 5 years, Navatima, then Tera, and Mahatera. And so it's just to designate seniority and who ordained first, but the practice is still the same, you know, because the whole aim of the life is to realize Nibbana, to realize true happiness, ultimate reality. Whether you're a Pokhao or a novice or Navaka, Majjhima, Tera, Mahatera, always keep that in mind. You know, why do you ordain? You know, is it, what's the point of this life in itself, other than, you know, if it's just used to increase a sense of identity with your position? Because we tend to identify easily with our, you know, I'm senior to you and you're junior and I ordained before you are, you did, and because the whole structure is based on that hierarchical structure of who ordained first. So like the Buddha was to establish the structure, the Vinaya, you know, it wasn't to increase the sense of self-importance as you get more senior, but to just create an impersonal structure, not based on achievements or abilities or social status, whatever. It's not about who's the most advanced meditator, who is an arahant, who is just a putuchana, an unenlightened person. You know, because the structure still operates, and without the identifying individuals as being one better than the other on a personal level, it's merely the impersonal structure of who ordained first, second, third, fourth. And it's perfect, you know, it creates this, and that's why it's good to reflect on it, because we do, you know, the ego wants to hold to positions of, you know, I'm a better meditator than you are, or I practice more than you do, and I'm senior to you. We all have these egos to live with, so that's why I encourage you to observe it. Do you really want to be superior to somebody else? Is that a peaceful state of mind, to feel that you're better? Or, you know, whether you feel you're inferior to somebody, the same thing, or equal. So whether you're junior or the same or senior, this is mere external structure, impersonal structure, not to be taken and clung to through the ego, through the personality. So, and like in the West, there's so much criticism of hierarchy. And I remember patriarchy, hierarchy, these are no longer politically correct. And so, you know, because the it's based on ideals, like Western democracy is very idealistic about how things should be, you know, like democracy itself is an ideal. It's not the Dhamma, it's an ideal of how things should be. Democratic governmental systems and socialism, communism, they're all based on ideals. And then, you know, freedom, equality, human rights, they're all good ideals. Ideals are the best anyway. They're at the top of the possibilities for thinking. You can, you know, you can create a perfect monastery in your mind just sitting here, and within a few minutes, how a perfect monastery should be as an ideal. And then when we cling to these ideals, then we become very critical of oneself or the places we're living in, the monks we're living with, the tradition that we're involved with. And I remember just, you know, when you, like I spent the first few months I was with Lungpo Cha at Wat Pa Pong, and then, you know, and I kind of raised him up with an ideal, you know, that he was perfectly enlightened monk. And so Upatak, waiting on Lungpo Cha, was always a kind of an honor, and you know, you felt you were very fortunate to you humble yourself before the teacher. You saw him as more attained, better than I am. And so that worked for a while, you know, it gave me a relationship with a teacher. But then it was challenged when I went to a branch monastery where I felt superior to the senior monk. And so I didn't think very highly of the senior monk, and I felt that I was much better monk than he was. And so I wouldn't upatak him. There were about four or five Thai monks with me, and they had the same thing. The senior monk was not an inspiring, charismatic leader. And so he was easy to fault and to criticize. And then I started reflecting on my own arrogance. You know, I started thinking, you know, according to the Vinaya, you're supposed to, as a junior monk, a Navaka monk, what is my duty toward the senior monk? It's not about whether I personally like him or he's you know, an attained, you know, monk, or has wisdom or insight, but he's senior and he's the Jawawat, the abbot, the head monk. And according to the Acharyavatta practices in Vinaya, it's very much, you know, to serve, to wash the feet when they come back, carry the alms bowl, and look after the senior monk, especially a part of a Navaka monk. That's the training for that position. So suddenly, then I just looked at myself in the arrogance, this conceit that I believed in, that I was superior and he wasn't worthy. And that's not a mental state I want to be reborn as. I don't want to be reborn in another lifetime and go around feeling superior or better. Because it's not peaceful. It's not a peaceful arrogance, conceit. It's not a peaceful condition to live with. So then I gave up that. I started doing performing my duties to, you know, what I was supposed to do to the senior monk, to the Jawa. And that began to appreciate him as a, you know, I began to see through my own prejudices and biases towards him. and saw him as a human being, as a good monk, who I became quite fond of. And so this is quite important to recognize, you know, to reflect on your life. Are you, what brings peace to the mind, to conscious awareness? What is peaceful and what isn't? And ideals are not peaceful. You know, they're the best you can create with your thinking mind. They're superlatives. But and that's how everything should be. But this is the way it is. So Dhamma is here and now, the way it is, rather than, you know, something that's... And Dhamma is not an ideal. It's not about how things should be, but the way things are. And so Dhamma is the way things are. All conditions are impermanent. All Dhamma is not self. And so this is the continuous reflection that we have in meditation to not just to grasp these two sentences as beliefs, but they're encouraging us to investigate what leads to nirvana, what leads to peace of mind, to in your own experience. And conceit, arrogance, personal aggrandizement, or personal depreciation, to be self-critical, to see yourself always in negative terms, not good enough, not smart enough, you're just in a lowly position because you're a Phokhao, or you're not a Mahatera, just to reflect on how we create problems around the structure, where the structure isn't a problem, really. If you begin to appreciate it, it's for social harmony, for samarki, for being able to live together without, you know, competing, envying each other's positions, forming a caste system based on personal views and opinions.
Longpo, do you recall the circumstances of your
when you first termed the phrase "it is like this"?
It's like this. Right now, it's like this. No, it might not be exactly the way you want it to be, but it is the way it is. But it's a kind of truism, but it's not meant to. It's not a critical statement. It's just a reminder to be aware right now at this moment. It's like this, and that gives you look inward. Then you're not looking outward. Well, you can, you know, like in any monastery. The changes from day to night and seasons, and sometimes it's inspiring, sometimes it's boring, sometimes you love it, sometimes you hate it, but it's like this. And that statement is not creating any value judgment, not judging it in any way, but it's an honest acceptance of the moment, this moment here and now, can only be this way because that's the way it is. And that gives you perspective on any desire that it be different, it be better, or fear that it's going to degenerate and be worse or whatever, because like the future is the unknown. And you know, when we think what will happen when we always... worried what would happen when Nungpa Cha passed away, you know, and at Amaravati they were reason why I retired was the monks were concerned about who's going to take charge of Amaravati when Ajahn Sumedho is dead. And because I was getting old then. And so, you know, so you plan ahead for the future. But at every moment of your life, it is the way it is, you know, whether you're happy, sad, healthy or sickly, you know, full of faith in wanting to practice meditation, wanting to devote your life to monastic life, wanting to become enlightened. All these kind of mental states arise, and despair and self-criticism is like this. You begin to, rather than judging it or changing it or denying it or analyzing or defending it, it's a way of accepting something, the reality of here and now. And Ajahn Buddha Thich, who was, some of you probably recall him, and he was very famous when I arrived in Thailand in 1966. Controversial monk in Surathani, Wat Thun Mot, and he was asked a question one time about in this desert, on BBC in the UK, they have this Desert Island Disc program where they interview some celebrity about what they would do, what kind of music would they take with them, and what kind of book would they take with them if they were to be on a desert island for the rest of their lives. You know, it's a kind of an interesting home, because usually, you know, they say the Bible or a set of Shakespeare, or a monk might say Visuddhimagga, or they might even allow the whole Tripitaka. But you're only allowed one book, so you have to be on an iPad or something. and then Buddha Thich said he wouldn't take any music or any book. He'd just take a little medallion that she'd wear around his neck saying Benyang Niang, which is, it's like this. And that really impressed me, you know. He was a kind of genius monk, you know. He's a scholar, meditator, a kind of nakbrat, and very, very amusing, very charming character. And Lungpo Cha really liked Ajahn Buddha Thich's teaching, because I remember when I was learning to read Thai, you know, I started reading the kind of tracts that would come from Suan Mok with Buddha Thich's teaching, and then that Lungpo Cha would allow us to read at Wat Pa Pong. And the thing that Lungpo Cha liked about Buddha Thich teaching was it's very reflective. It's on the Four Noble Truths. It's about here and now, and Buddha Thich being an intellect, you know, he had an interesting way of looking at life, at Thailand, at Thai society, and he was a social. You know, he could be seen as a social critic, but not one that is just criticizing the society, but pointing a direction for society that would be skillful and beneficial to us all. And then in the Pali Canon, they have the word da-da-da, which means it's like this, or suchness, or as isness, the way it is. And my original interest in Buddhism started with Zen Buddhism back in the 1950s, a kind of Japanese style of D.T. Suzuki and Alan Watts, that was becoming quite popular, especially in places like San Francisco. And they always talked about suchness in the Zen translations at that time. And I could never quite get my mind around suchness. But now I understand what they mean. So, you know, most of, like, the thinking mind's a critical function. It's about what's good and what's bad and right and wrong, heaven and hell. And so the critical mind, you know, when you're looking at yourself, you know, you've developed a critical mind, maybe outward at the world, the society, the people you live with, but it also goes inward, you know, so you criticize yourself because you have ideals about, being perfect and honest and loyal and truthful and moral and respectable, and all these are ideals that we have, principles and high standards. These are all, you know, what we can be very attached to and identify with or hope to achieve. And then we aren't that good. We can't be ideals. We're not ideal forms. You know, you've got marble statues that are ideal forms, like the Buddha Rupa in the Sala, an ideal form. It's, you know, how we should all look. you've got ideals don't feel, don't have nerve endings, don't have, their eyes don't see anything or they don't feel anything, they're perfect in form. Whatever happens in front of the Buddha Rupa, the Buddha Rupa never gets upset or distressed by, you could have a gunfight in the Sala and the Buddha Rupa would be totally indifferent. Why is that? Because it's an icon, an ideal, it doesn't feel. And that's where ideals don't feel anything. When we attach to ideals, then we can only be critical of the world and ourselves, because the world isn't an ideal. These physical forms, human bodies, are not ideals. We have to live with sensitivity, with feelings, with heat and cold, with all kinds of conditions that affect us, you know, that don't affect an ideal Buddha Rupa. So, and this is quite important, because the Western society is very much based on ideals, you know, so democracy and communism, socialism, they're all ideals. Libertarianism is an ideal. And we idolize the past. You remember England in the 1950s, or America in the 1950s. You know, that's my youth, was in the 1950s, and I remember, I thought life would be getting better and better by this time. But now I look back and say, it's not like the 1950s. And so, because where you're at in the present isn't ideal, you know, it's not, you know, sometimes it seems that way, but it can't sustain itself, no moment in time can, you know, has no stability. It's passing. It's anicca. It's impermanent. So, you know, we become monks because we have ideals. We are inspired. These are like guiding stars. They're high and beautiful, but the practice of meditation, bhavana, in the Pali sense, isn't about ideas anymore. It's about the way it is. And so, it's like this is just a helpful reminder. Like when you get carried away with something, you know, something really, you feel stressed or angry or frightened or whatever emotion that you're experiencing, you can use it. It's like this. Like feeling stressed out is like this. And you kind of stop, you know, just reacting to it by observing it. The body's stressed, the mind feels tense, and you feel angry or averse or jealous or frightened, and it's like this. So it's not saying that you shouldn't feel that way. You know, that's judgmental again. And according to, if you were a perfect ideal bhikkhu, you'd be beyond jealousy, beyond anger, sexual desire, and greed, and all these kind of passions. You know, you'd be an arhat where none of these passions would have any root to grow in. And that's an ideal thought, you know, about how you'd like it to be. And then you compare yourself when you're in the state of anger or resentment or fear, and you think, I can never be an arahant. You know, it's way beyond me, because look at me, I've been a monk all these years and I still feel jealous, I still have fears and resentments, and I'm no good. And I've got to work hard to get rid of these passions. But bhavana isn't about control or getting rid of, but understanding. So the statement, it's like this, is a way of understanding the way it is in the present. It's a skillful use of language.